interrupting the current neo-uronial climate challenge, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting episode BTWRLM 631. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport. So get you behind the woodshed, because you don't know what you miss until you make the switch and get you behind the woodshed for that dose of reality, because you can't go wrong when you get behind the woodshed. Picking up from last episode, Bitcoin will be part of the existing globalista financial system. Russia's Sphere launches Bitcoin-linked bondage. Imagine that. The product is already available to qualified investors on the over-the-counter market, the bank has announced. Russia's largest lender, Sphere, formerly Sphere Bank, like Burbank, has introduced structured bonds tied to Bitcoin, according to an announcement of the bank's website. The new financial product tracks both the price of the top cryptocurrency and the dollar-to-ruble exchange rate. So we're seeing there the dollar isn't really going anywhere quite yet. Sphere says the bond is currently available to a limited pool. I suppose that'll be the government-chosen, behaviorally controlled, of qualified investors on the over-the-counter market. The bank noted that the new bond offers potential returns from Bitcoin's price movements in dollars and from the dollar's appreciation against the ruble. According to the bank, investors will not need to open cryptocurrency wallets or use unregulated foreign platforms to buy the new bond, as all transactions will be conducted in rubles within Russia's legal and infrastructure systems. The bank added that it plans to expand its offerings with full listings on the Moscow Exchange expected soon. Quote, this will ensure transparency, liquidity, and convenience for a wide range of qualified investors, the bank said. What? The type of liquidity that allows the government to come seize the value? How convenient, folks. Especially when the bond investments can be highly risky, even when the well-informed speculator, and more so for those not subsidized by the government, like those too big to fail. It announced that a Bitcoin futures product will launch in the lender's Sphere Investments app on June 4th, following the listing at MOEX. So it's all the way already there available in Russia. So we'll point out the qualified investor. That's digitally identified, age verified, tracked, traced, and taxed. The token citizen, blockchain to the Siberian Gulag, as it says, qualified, captured within the Russia's legal and infrastructure system. And the very important statement showing that the threat of cryptocurrency, but is also its susceptibility to control, as we've been discussing behind the woodshed all these years now. While the digital assets are not recognized as a legal tender in the country, the government has moved to regulate their use. See, the country, the government is in control for the purposes of government, not necessarily for the people. Just like the U.S. federal government conditioned the use of gold and silver coin, which benefits the people, not the government. Has to deal with that. All that is private property. And I've read that little thing from the Federal Reserve Board that talked about those. That the gold and silver has to be put on the asset side of the ledger. So the government seems to only deal with property by extortion instead of as it is supposed to be, let's say in America, what makes it a great, actually, the government was to protect property. So regulation means the government is embracing the unruly, irrepressible outlaw. That which is outside of the government, in part privacy, in exchange for some acceptable benefit for the regulation in order to control the outlier. And I've explained this, the U.S. government, what they did with relative to the miners, but the army was at war with in the West in the 1860s or right before, by enacting the load law. And upon that question, why connect the Bitcoin at all? Inherent centralization aside, what's the real benefit bestowed by government? Why attach the government at all? Or does this sort of legislation perform more than one purpose for government and its tools? What do you think, Tim? Well, never mind. For instance, as a qualified investor, why not just let the Bitcoin rise in value against the falling fiat currency and take the profit, so-called. That's what most people are doing anyway. The move follows guidance from the Bank of Russia, which on May 28th authorized financial institutions to offer crypto-linked derivatives, securities, and digital assets to qualified investors. The derivatives here sounds like the fraud in the United States created to bail out the banks, which, well, the people here paid for it. And so it sounds like qualified investors will be protected from the next financial debacle. That would be quite the benefit given to no consumer. Maybe we're beginning to see who or what these qualified investors are. It sounds like the next plunder is on, set up for the digital takedown. The central bank specified, however, that these instruments must not involve the actual delivery of crypto tokens and proposed a pilot program limiting direct crypto transactions to specific investor categories. So we see here again the distinction in government products and private ones. They shall not be commingled, but the blockchain is not decentralized. That's its problem, in my estimation. If only that could be fixed. And people weren't exploiters or criminals, but the government offer wasn't an attractive bondage to protect you. But why? It appears the ultimate advantage for government, not the people, is what we're going to see here, again, over and over. The law passed last year banning advertising cryptocurrencies to the general public and limited services facilitating crypto transactions. And another measure classified digital currencies as property, making them subject to income tax. So there you go. No different than in America. A Russian civil right is to suffer wrongful extortion of every kind of his or her property, just as it says in 42 U.S.C. 1981 for the person subject to the United States municipality. Who'd have thunk it, folks? Global gulag, folks, right there. The global tax plantation. If and you thunk, the U.S. is much different than Russia in that regard. So soon to be the AI enhanced for your bondage terror, I would suspect here. But home of the free and all, right? And we got into a new interesting little definitional change, and there are things that are changing in the world stage, and that's going to drive this gold and silver I've been talking to you about as it moves in more chaos. You saw as the chaos drives everything up in last episode, to let them eat chaos, is what seems to be on the table for us. SMO may be upgraded to CTO. And I looked at this, and I looked at the list of what they're doing over there in Russia. Remember, I say it's a carnival mirror looking back at us in the United States. I started to notice that they're giving us a heads up. But if this thing comes down in any way in earnest, the military type the controls that they're talking about as we use the excuse of immigration that starts to get everybody involved, as we've heard the stories starting to come out. This little list, this little change, this little terminological change is a real big deal. Even though it's happening over there, it gives us a guidance for what can happen literally everywhere, actually. In case anyone missed it, during yesterday's teleconference between President Putin and members of the Russian government, the president clearly outlined his view of the Zelensky government is an absolutely corrupt and incompetent terrorist regime. This opens up the possibility that during the next Russian security clearance meeting, the matter upgrading the special military operation to the status of counter-terrorist operation may be raised. Move over, SMO. The CTO may be here. The differences in Russian law between the SMO and CTO are very serious, as I will outline below. Special military operation is a convenient term which describes the scope of the current Russian operations in Ukraine. The conduct of the SMO does not affect life within Russia in any significant legal sense. The CTO, by contrast, is a legal framework with key implications for all Russian residents as well as people living in the areas of operation. Let me just offer, as I was reading this through, it just occurred to me I need to tell you before I forget it. This is our PATROT Act for the United States already in place, but they're doing it much kinder and gentler, as they would say. This is kind of reversed. They started at a slow pace, and now it looks like they might be changing just by designating a neighbor to be a terrorist. The CTO regime is introduced and canceled by the head of Russia's FSB, and such, it is primarily a national security measure. The purpose of a CTO regime is to prevent and minimize the consequences of any and all threats to national security, such as, but not limited to, terrorist attacks. The CTO regime can be imposed on all or part of Russia, as well as in areas of military operations such as Ukraine or elsewhere. A brief summary of CTO legal implications. FSB officers become part of the command structure of the military operation and participate in planning, military planning, and decision-making at the highest levels. Let me just interject here as you've heard me talk. What if it's already in place, not since the PATRT Act, but before that, that this has actually been going on in the United States, but no one can see it. No one knows to look. A new central operational command is created, staffed by officers from the FSB alongside those of the Ministry of Defense and Interior Ministry. Conscripted soldiers may be utilized in combat operations, not just mobilized reservists. Security services may requisition property of citizens such as personal vehicles, warehouses, etc. for CTO use. Strict powers of control over the exchange of information, communication means may be disconnected by security services without notice, unimpeded access to any CTO employee into any premise in Russia without the need of legal warrant. Please stop me if you haven't heard that happening already in the United States, but keep moving here. What they're about looking to produce, well, because they just named their neighbor a terrorist, what Russia may be doing all over the entire territory of Russia here, with a simple designation change. Restrictions of freedom of movement. Employees of FSB, Ministry of Interior, Ministry of Emergency Situations, and others become part of the CTO. Expanded powers to security forces in who may be designated as hostile combatant. This opens the door to targeting destruction of non-military individuals. The last point is very important because it creates a legal framework under which Ukrainian government officials may be deliberately targeted and destroyed, including but not limited to Zelensky himself. Well, just put that, bring that at home. Bring that rule at home, folks. We were just talking about things last episode. What did Trump say as well? What are the names they're trying to throw out there, you homegrown? What about a political opposition, then, or those the government doesn't like? Added on to this. Again, the carnival mirror we see in international realms and the nations, to me, reflects very clearly what's going on here, except it's warped a bit. A lot of it's warped by us, too, misperceiving, but it's actually reflecting back on us. And for the most part, people don't see that. That we accept a whole lot. We're tolerant to a whole lot, actually. And there's for some of us that do the reading and see how stringent it is, we realize that there's really no control in the government and there's really no rights extended to us but what we're gave. As I used to say, I say that periodically, I'll say it right now. You only have the rights you're gave. And no, I don't think I'm really misspeaking that. Even though I might be behind the woodshed. So now this next article I'm going to read, we should find general favor in, but it comes to a single sentence conclusion which screams Russian, or should I say globalista propaganda, planting a familiar and consistent suggestion for the reader to abandon all organic foundations for acceptance of the future that they want. And this is written by Vitaly Rumshin. Or does he even know? When you go read through this stuff, I always have the question, do people really know what they're writing about? I'm not so sure. But I'm going to have to give them credit like they do, because they're the ones telling us the plan, if we'll read for that. As I've told you before, reading about sustainable development, finding the gurus that wrote to all the university professors that were writing books and things, manuscripts, back in the late 60s, early 70s, particularly in the beginning 80s. They're laying it all out for us if we just knew where to go read. No, I didn't go read those then. I had to read them after the, well, just after the 90s into the 2000s. By then I started understanding what was really going on. Again, after I saw the Benedict on Hamilton and read that, it started to line me up on what I was reading, what I was seeing in the news, what I was seeing in the laws, what I was seeing everywhere. It's all written in that book, it seemed. Not all of it, but most of it. All your international principles were certainly there. Oh, yeah, it's in Admiralty, too. So it's very interesting. It's written by Vitaly Rumshin. Always wondered, these people know or not? Always an interesting question to me to have to ask it. But, again, that's why I went to potentials and possibilities and you just let things lie, you lay them out for yourself, you categorize them in these areas, nothing proven unless it is, and then you keep watch and see where it shifts into a known or a continuing deception or a not probable, not possible, not probable, and move them along as you read. So I'll read the section. Listen to the apparently true narrative of the plausibly supported intriguing power war within the United States government, but don't get lost in that narrative. Don't bias yourself with an agreement or disagreement with it. Just listen and see if you can identify the propagandistic reason for this discussion at all. For me, maybe a hint here for you. I had the thought of the man who warned America in 1984, Yuri Bezmenov, and the final stages, and his explanation of how the population of the United States can be controlled to any fabricated future. Oh, one more thing. You may not think much of his analysis in this article, the one-sentence propaganda, but it is a method that had been used to get this society to the future that they want, because people dismiss the programming technique and think it doesn't affect them, also failing to consider the technique may have worked on the next guy or gal, or that there are a lot more of them than themselves, which have sway. Again, that's how a democracy is a war against any individual. It's not really supposed to be like that. It's certainly not for property. There is no democracy where property rights exist. So I've told you about all this. I explained why the United States is different in that regard and why it makes it better. It's about great, but we can't hold it. But it was just as also as I saw on the other side, more overtly executed great Covey swindle. You saw the whole world just fall down and not even look to their own written securities built right in. It's literally everywhere that had any kind of a court system. Had the very same laws everywhere to protect themselves. But everybody fell. Except that last 17% or so. And some of that wasn't because of the law. It was just because you're just a contrarian. And that's maybe good enough, but not in my sense, if not, when we have to be educated to the rules, if you will. And in this place, it's supposed to be those officials are not supposed to be the tyranny they become. The article, the Biden years, when America started to resemble the late-stage USSR. And maybe, as I read that title, why I keep referring to Russia, even though they say they're Russia, they do the things that USSR has done, and that's what sustainable development pulls in, and the execution of all that. And remember, you don't have any property and you'll like it. And in Russia, we found out that there's no obligation by the government to protect anybody there. But that's unlike the United States in certain instances, in particular the property. And I've explained all that. In particular, if you want to go there, go to the You're Enabling Act. There's a treaty, if you will, domestic treaty between the states. Can't be broken. And there's an undertaking done by the states to protect the property that was disposed by the Congress, which also has a grantor's responsibility to protect its grants. So it's pretty fascinating what's there, if people would just look at it. But the Biden years, when America started to resemble the late-stage USSR, well, okay, we'll go with the title. I think it was before that. How Washington Became a Gerontocracy. It's been a while since we've heard much about Joe Biden, hasn't it? Yet here he is, back in the headlines, not because of some triumphant return to form, but for all the wrong reasons. The former U.S. president has once again found himself at the center of national attention, thanks to a sequence of revealing, deeply troubling events. It begins with the Axios publishing the full audio of Biden's now infamous interview with Special Prosecutor Robert Hur, the same interview in which Hur concluded that the president then suffered from serious memory issues. As the recording confirmed, he wasn't wrong. Biden struggled to recall basic facts, even the date of his son died. Days later, another bombshell dropped. Biden had been diagnosed with an aggressive form of prostate cancer. The news barely had time to circulate before the release of Original Sin, a book by CNN's Jack Tapper and Axios' Alex Thompson, tore down what little remained of the White House facade. The authors didn't just suggest that Biden had declined mentally during his presidency. They asserted that he had not been governing at all. Instead, they described the Politburo of family members and close aides who effectively ran the United States in his name. It's a term that will sound all too familiar to the Russian ear, and one that cuts deeper than many Americans realize. And let me offer, don't get lost in this direction, this narrative. Consider any relationship that may be viewed, if you will, in familial ties or similarities of objective. And you're seeing that even in the Trump administration now, despite the focus on Biden here. For years, critics of the United States establishment, especially abroad, have joked about Washington's OBCOM and a reference to the old Communist Party regional committees of the Soviet Union. Today, that comparison doesn't seem like satire. It feels like a diagnosis. It's especially ironic that these revelations are coming not from conservative firebrands of Russia media, but they're from the very liberal American outlets like CNN and Axios that worked so hard in 2024 to prop up the Biden administration and conceal the cracks forming behind the curtain. Remember, all the big tech did the same thing, didn't they? They shifted into the right position in the right place, right? They got into their slots in the new administration, the new regime. But I'm less interested in their delayed honesty than in their questions Americans are now starting to ask. How did the United States, with all its checks and balances, end up with the gerontocratic shadow government? Why did Washington begin to resemble Moscow circa 1982? Let's start there. The gerontocracy emerges when the ruling elite can no longer tolerate change. In the USSR, it was the aging leadership of the Communist Party that clung to power. In the US, it's the political generation that peaked in the 1990s and 2000s, the last so-called consensus generation of American politics. Now, I want to have you fix on that. You look around and see how much consensus is talked about. And be careful when they say it's not. You look very carefully. It probably is. Their grip on power outlasted their ideas, though Democrats and Republicans had their differences. They broadly agreed on the same post-Cold War worldview. They ran the show for decades until Donald Trump shattered that illusion in 2016. Trump's rise forced a reckoning. On the right, younger Republicans moved toward a more nationalist, populist agenda. On the left, Democrats tacked hard toward identity politics and expanded welfare, partly driven by their reliance on minority voting blocs and partly by the legacy of Barack Obama's progressive rhetoric. Now, let me offer to you, I've exposed to you the right in looking at the Judeo-Christian identity is a woke identity politics. So it's not in the right. And that's the whole problem I'm trying to point out here. Be careful of dismissing things and not applying them everywhere equally to make your assessments. By the time Trump's term ended, the American political elite faced a nightmare. If they handed power to the next generation, they risked total collapse. The establishment Republicans had already been steamrolled by Trump's base. Democrats feared the same fate if they embraced their more radical progressives. Their solution was to cling to the past. Enter Joe Biden, a relic of the consensus era, sold to voters as a unifying moderate. In reality, he was a placeholder. Let me hear this consensus era thing again. Let me advise you. Let me point to you that, again, the DOGE was an advisory committee of collaboration. That is consensus. That's a process system, too. It's not going away. It's in the law. It's not in the Trump administration. He relied on it. The consensus era sold to voters as a unifying moderate. In reality, he was a placeholder, right? Biden was. A human firewall designed to stop the rising tide of both sides. The hope was to return to normal would restore calm. Instead, it prolonged the crisis. Biden, like Brezhnev before him, became the living embodiment of a system unable to face reality. And now, as America looks back on the Biden years, they are forced to reckon with the consequences of their denial. Power didn't disappear. It simply drifted into back rooms and family circles. Now look at where it's drifting now, to the future that they want. Decision-making was outsourced to unaccountable figures behind the scenes, and the public was kept in the dark. Even Biden himself, we now know, was shielded from bad polling numbers. But the deeper lesson is more uncomfortable. Change comes whether you want it or not. That's why the system, the university system, the sustainable development system has what we have heard are change agents. Obama was a change agent. Hope and change, hope and change. These are the things that are sitting in the system. It's systemic. It doesn't go away. It doesn't even go away when there's a so-called change through Trump. He left it sitting there. He could only stick around. He'd come back. It's still there. When he leaves, it's going to be there because they're not doing anything to remove it. The U.S. establishment tried to shut out the new generation. It only worked temporarily. Trump is back in power. Yes, he is old, but unlike Biden, he has surrounded himself with younger dynamic figures who are already shaping the Republican Party's future. And listen very carefully what that is. Don't look at your hopes and whims and dreams. Look at what it is. It sits in the character of the people. Look at his administration. Look at the cabinet members. It's not just one thing either. A lot of people focus on one. There's like a whole bunch of mischaracterizations that are built into these people that are in his cabinet. They all have their change agent positions in many of these. The Democrats, by contrast, have learned nothing. Despite their crushing defeat in 2024, the old leadership continues to resist renewal, and now it's costing them. Just recently, the Republicans passed Trump's major tax bill in the House of Representatives by a single vote. That vote was lost because Democrat Congressman Jerry Connolly, age 75, had passed away just before the session. He was the third Democrat to die in office this year. This morbid pattern hasn't gone unnoticed. Americans have begun to joke grimly that the Democratic Party is literally dying. And the punchlines, as dark as they may be, contain more truth than fiction. Washington is starting to resemble Brezhnev's Moscow, not just in age, but in inertia. Now I want you to consider that in physics. The inertia is not stopping. There's not much input that a president can put relative to law to change that inertia that's built into the system. This is what I've been talking about. So this writer, Bob, looks at that and observes it. Not just in age, it's in inertia. In the end, the lesson isn't about personalities. It's about systems that refuse to adapt, systems that cling to the past until the present falls apart. Let me offer an additional concept. The system that plans to be the change that's moving, it looks like it's going to be in the past. The Washington Obcom may have seemed like a Russian jest once. It's not a joke anymore. So I'm looking at this a little bit different, I suppose, than most people will read that report if you read it. And I'm seeing inside there maybe an ignorance of what we're going on already. It's been going on in the United States all the time. It's not just one regime. It's not just one administration. And there's a promotion inside there that what Russia is doing is different. That is the subtle little hook. But I have a link over to the Yuri Brezhmanov's video where he explains the four stages of ideological subversion done in 1984. And that idea, that consideration relative to the perception managed, how they can do that to a populations. They do that very, very, well, incrementally, first of all, but very right, stealthily, right in front of you. You don't even really realize it. I ran across a recent video called At 60, Keanu Reeves finally reveals the truth about The Matrix. What Keanu Reeves revealed about The Matrix is something fans never saw coming. What if The Matrix was never just a movie? What if the truth was buried beneath the surface all along, and they made him stay silent? The messages he's been carrying for decades is now one you'll want to hear before it's too late. But you've heard it, folks. And of which I posted an ex-Twitter about, and I wrote, confirmed, The Matrix is not a movie. And I was responding to a post of 2016 in June, just a bit over a year, you know, these years later, in June, and I was responding to Gary L., who was reposting Elon Musk, saying, the chance we are not living in a computer simulation is one in billions, and provided a link, which I left in there. And my response was a day later, and I asked Gary, how long have I been saying The Matrix is not a movie? Crickets in a smiley face. And another link I put in. Now we get to the quote from the video, inside that video, how we're already trapped in systems we don't see. And I'll add, still don't. And I post the link to that vid so you can read it with the text in the description that says, What Keanu Reeves revealed about the Matrix is something fans never saw coming. Which I interpret to say, I guess, I wasn't a fan. And part of that matrix of control, how we can know Trump is not very far thinking or part of the overthrow, using a very well-known diversion technique. On a subject matter, we at Jefferson Mining District attempted 4 times to officially contact him to stop during Trump 1. Not just one university, like Harvard, but the entire university system across the nation, creating ambassadors of foreign agenda, actively infiltrating every aspect of federal and state government, which our lawsuit by the default of the parties, such as the state of Oregon itself and its representatives, including its instrumentalities, as well as the Bar Association and its university system law schools, so-called, were committing treason against the American people. They do it daily, and that remains unabated. But the technique was point out an actual or merely alleged wrongdoing of an organization that claims wrongs of which sufficient numbers of duped targets can support, focusing their attention while all the other parts of the organized criminal syndicate continue to stealthily move along in the system and plunder against the people continues, is what we see and what I see going, what Trump's doing on Harvard. But this article, elite Western universities form a corrupt and parasitic empire. Someone looking from outside looking in. Again, it's happening over there too. And that's why I wonder, do they really see this there? But instead of high-quality education, these institutions are fostering a global neo-feudal system reminiscent of the British Raj. That's right. Most everyone can get behind stopping a corrupt, parasitic empire, but just Western universities? Shouldn't the finger be pointing at the corrupt and parasitic government? Do you hear the distraction already? And did you know the high quality education is not the higher education pushed by governments? So my comments are not to exonerate the corrupt and parasitic university system or all the ways that system is corrupt and parasitic, but we're here from the government to help, and we're going to focus the laser dazzlers on this one entity right here. Oh, and disregard the fact that this is a university system is a tool of the government deception and control. Right, USAID? Or whatever is left of you in the corrupt and parasitic criminal syndicate's reorganization catbot cover-up. Right, Trump? Right, cat turd too? Remember, folks, systems of control you haven't yet identified because the Matrix is not a movie. The United States President Donald Trump has banned international students from attending Harvard University, citing national security concerns. The move has sparked widespread condemnation from academics and foreign governments who warn it could damage America's global influence and reputation for academic openness. At stake is not just Harvard Global's appeal, but the very premise of open academic exchange that has long defined elite higher education in the United States. So did you miss it? Trump doesn't like foreigners learning to be ambassadors for the world agenda. He wants only Americans to become ambassadors of foreign agendas to more easily, Vince, more easily, more quickly get buy-in for the transformative overthrow of America. But only at Harvard? Get it? Look at what he did there. Focuses on that. The whole system's that way. I hope you saw that. I hope you get what that was right there. While the rest of the university system continues the work of the overthrow unabated, we all focus in on Harvard. And rah-rah, let's take them out. Oh, all the billions. And they need to be taken out, like all the rest of it, though. So the rest of the article discussed the canard, right, Frumpy? Haven't heard from you for a long time. Hope you've been okay. The canard, the premise of open academic exchange. But that's only a cover to provide space for the noise aiding the cover-up of what appears to me to be a reorganization of the occupying forces to better, more transparently hide from you. So you look right through them. So you don't see them, because if you see them, you knows them. But the story doesn't stop there. We need to blame it on a foreign country. Squirrel! China done it. China's swift condemnation of Trump's policy added a layer of geopolitical irony to the debate. Why would Beijing feign concern for America's international standing amid a bitter trade war? The international standing of the U.S. universities has long been tarnished by a woke psychosis which spread like cancer to all branches of government. What? You mean the guy behind the woodshed has been correct all these years? They mention the metastasization of cancer as if it's a well-accepted malady here as well. Not the plague it has been and fostered and encouraged around the world by any country or corporation or CEO or NGO or any other war criminal singing the praises of sustainable development. So what was behind China's latest gripe? The answer may lie in the unspoken rules of soft power. Ivy League campuses are battlegrounds for influence, even for your mind, folks. The U.S. deep state has long recruited foreign students to promote its interests abroad, subsidized by American taxpayers, no less. There's your leverage funding. China is apparently playing the same game, leveraging elite universities to co-opt future leaders on its side to a geostrategic fence. Leveraging American taxpayers is exactly how this is all working. I've been talking about this for years. Leverage funding. It's already used by the United States and against we, the unaware. Just like in our 2013 lawsuit, we proved through the default by the state parties of the Bar Association. Now openly admitted, but blamed on China. The entire university system is the grooming of the future leaders, the global ambassadors, to alter our organic establishment to the future that they want. And this has been going on for decades. And Trump's not stopping a bit of it. And kind of irritated me. We were going to tell him about it back in Trump 1. He wouldn't answer our letters. Now, how did he know about that? Maybe nothing. Maybe he just doesn't know. And that's the shame. And this is still going on, and it's getting more organized against us. And even as Russia ostensibly exposes the university system subversion, and Trump points to one, relatively to the foreign intelligence now, to inform us here in the United States it accepts the subversion in other areas for its purposes, the glob you lists, and they expose for us the insidious and metastasization of this globulous cancer. As we read, Moscow accuses British NGO of subversion activities in universities. The Oxford Russia Fund used professors to spread LGBT material and gather political intel, the Federal Security Service has said. Russia's Federal Security Service, the FSB, the same one that's going to be partly in charge with working with the military when they go to CTO, has accused the UK-based Oxford Russia Fund of conducting covert influence campaign in Russia, universities aimed at undermining national security. The organization has already been declared undesirable by Moscow, a designation that prohibits its activities and implies involvement in hostile propaganda efforts. Have you heard Trump declare all these universities to be undesirable because they're creating ambassadors? No. The Oxford Russia Fund began operating in Russia in 2006 with the stated aim of supporting higher education in the humanities and social sciences. While it claimed to provide scholarships and academic resources, its work raised red flags for the authorities. In 2021, the Prosecutor General's Office banned the organization, citing threats to national sovereignty. According to the FSB, it's nonetheless continued to operate subversively, maintaining covert ties with university staff and facilitating the spread of foreign narratives. What is sustainable development, folks? What's in your university system in the United States? Likely everywhere. This gentleman, Sachs, he's the head of sustainable development in the university he's at. He's in the news all the time. He works with Russia. He used to work with Russia. I like the guy. He makes sense, but watch out. Watch out what's behind that guy. Why is he saying stuff? He says lots of good stuff. You get buy into what he's saying. Next thing he's slamming you with is the sustainable development stuff. All the woke stuff. The FSB claimed the British Intelligence Service has a long targeted Russian academia as a channel for ideological influence. See, climate change is not about the weather. Okay, there it is. Ideological influence. Quote, they seek to raise a new generation of Russian citizens in a matter beneficial to London and maybe other places. So Harvard is only the tip of the iceberg that Trump has run his ship of state up against. When we look at it through this view, and Russia is still, despite it looking at that, and while it's pointing its finger at things, it's willing to invite the vampire squid within its gates, as we read this story from there. Company in Moscow, Technopolis, special economic zone, increases animal vaccine production by 43%. So those of you who listened to the broadcast for many couple, maybe a month or two, you've heard we talked about these little things. They're right in the United States, too. The company producing immunobiological preparations for animals at the Penchatniki site of the Moscow Technopolis Special Economic Zone. We don't call them that here. It's the same thing. Manufactured approximately 15 million doses of vaccines in Q1 of 2025. Representing 43.3% increases in production volume compared to the same period last year. And we can read all these details and get lost in them, but let's keep at the point of what these things is, what this is going on, who's involved with this, and where it goes around the world. And where do we see those things if we know what we're looking at? In Q1 2025, the company produced about 12.5 million doses of vaccines, they claim, for agricultural animals, as well as 2.5 million doses for pets. The total production volume increased by 43% compared to the same period last year. Pharmaceutical enterprises in the capital play an important role in meeting the needs of Russian medicine and veterinary service. Veterinary science. Now remember, I said service, I was thinking the military service. Remember the great Kobe swindle was the start of the veterinary and the military went through there. And I told you all about that way early on. The ready-made industrial infrastructure of the Moscow SEZ's Penchatniki site enabled the vet biochem country to design and build new production facilities in compliance with good manufacturing practice standards. GMP. The GMP certificate from the Republic of Turkey will help the company expand its export potential. The Moscow Technopolis Special Economic Zone is a territory with a special legal status that offers a preferential business regime for investors. The total area of the SEZ sites hosting high-tech enterprises exceeds 398 hectares. So, even in Russia, a foreign trade zone with a special legal status and a preferential business regime, just like in America. The Rockefeller Group is likely rejoicing. The difference, though, is that where the company in Russia produces something not many, if any, other company makes right there, that's probably why they're promoting it. In America, the foreign companies enjoying the privileged business regime compete with local production to destroy it, while the surrounding landowners pay for that destruction through increasing property taxes, the leveraged funding. To support all that, because you know those foreign trade zones in America, the local governments take care of all the people they bring into those special places. And there are foreigners that come in underneath the special work. They're like slaves. So you heard me speak about that foreign cancer in recent episodes, referencing Clint Richardson's comprehensive video on the subject. It's one of the reasons why Trump can't make America great again, either. And maybe why he doesn't talk about this Rockefeller Group approved international foreign exploitation zones or special privilege, or even advocate to Congress to change that subversion along with the entire university's sustainable support system. So as in the United States, so in Russia or Turkey and around the globe, the advancement of the globalism, as we've been hearing, another form of singularity or unity, or inclusiveness. And as we hear all that, we've got the streams of code. The Matrix is not a movie. The streams of code creating the Siberian Gulag are breaking ground right here underneath Trump's nose. He produced it. He's asking for it. He's handing it to you on a silver and gold platter, which won't be yours. Trump taps Palantir to compile data on Americans. Oh, yeah, more than what I've been reporting, on top of everything else. The Trump administration have expanded Palantir's work with the government, spreading the company's technology, which could easily merge data on Americans throughout agencies. In March, President Trump signed an executive order calling for the federal government to share data across agencies, raising questions over whether he might compile a master list of personal information on Americans that could give him untold surveillance power. But he's going to be gone. Don't get trapped in these timings. Yeah, maybe him now, but they're also saying everything he wants is not going to be ready until he gets out of office. So this is going to be for the next guy. And even so, we don't need to see it anyway. Mr. Trump has not publicly talked about the effort since. Maybe he doesn't understand it, I guess. Would it be, can I be nice? Is he really that absent? I think he is, actually. But we can't. He's the ruler of the world, if you will. He's the king. He commands. He's the bully on the block, actually. So he has a power, and we have to recognize that. Behind the scenes, officials have quietly put technological building blocks into place to enable his plan. What have I been saying for months and months and months, and we finally get it right here. Right here. Right now. Finally. Would have been talking about it for 15 years, but that's okay. No one listened to the guy behind the woodshed, except my listener, and thank you very much. In particular, they have turned the one company Palantir, the data analysis and technological firm. The Trump administration has expanded Palantir's work across the federal government in recent months. The company has received more than $113 million in federal government spending since Mr. Trump took office, according to public records, including additional funds from existing contracts as well as new contracts with the Department of Homeland Security and the Pentagon. Those were the couple stories I reported on months ago, maybe now. This does not include the $795 million contract the United States Department of Defense awarded the company last week, which has not been spent. Representatives of Palantir are also speaking to at least two other agencies, the Social Security Administration and the Internal Revenue Service, about buying its technology, according to six government officials and Palantir's employees with knowledge of the discussions. The push to put a key Palantir product called Foundry into at least four federal agencies, including DHS and the Health and Human Services Department, is on the table as well. Widely adopting Foundry, which organizes and analyzes data, paves the way for Mr. Trump to easily merge information, from different agencies, the government official said. Creating detailed portraits of Americans based on government data is not just a pipe dream. The Trump administration has already sought access to hundreds of data points of citizens and others through government databases, including their bank account numbers, the amount of their student debt, and their medical claims and any disability status. And this is somehow supposed to make America great again? And those across the pond, you will not be left behind. Even if it's a government-caused self-inflicted wound, government exploring digital ID in a bid to cut illegal migration and welfare fraud. Don't forget that Palantir is Israeli connected, and that works with Britain as well. Britain is currently the only country in Europe without an ID card system, but that could be about to change here. Now, senior Downing Street figures are reportedly looking very closely at plans for a new Brit card, which just feels so special. The card stored on a smartphone would be used to verify an individual's right to live and work in the UK. God help you if you have a power outage, folks. It would also be linked to the government record, or maybe someone who hacked your account, like the government itself. It would also be linked to government records and be used to check entitlements to benefits and identify welfare fraud. Remember, I've talked about your presumption of innocence does not exist. They presume you to be the thing they're targeting, and then you got to prove that you're not. You got to dig yourself out of the hole they buried you in. Like all you verification age guys and gals. No, you're not old enough to say you're not. No, you got to prove it now. You're condemned to be have no capacity at all. You're condemned to be a minor. No, not one that digs dirt and finds gold or anything else. No, someone who's underage. No capacity in law. Plans have now been put forward to have Labor Together and pro-Starmer think tank says so. It sent a paper to the number 10 policy unit to examine its proposals. Under the plan, every adult would be required to show their card when taking up a new job or renting a property. The app would automatically check their right to work against government records. And this is already happening in the United States, so I don't know what the big question is. It's just a matter of getting Palantir to put all that information together. One nice little organized spot, isn't it? Then Trump can finger his way through all your information. The system would be used to cross-reference the stored identity against company tax records to identify firms with workers who had not completed checks. Well, that's a covering for extortion, isn't it? Labor Together argues it would help to clamp down on the vast numbers of people overstaying their visas. Thing I understand, maybe none of those people have visas, right? You're just letting the people flood in, this self-inflicted wound. Do you think this was kind of planned, just maybe? It claimed half of those whose asylum claims were rejected over the past 14 years are likely still to be in Britain. Well, whose fault was that? Again, self-inflicted, and the people of Britain are going to pay for it. This is the excuse, the gift that keeps on giving to the government. The report published Friday has so called on Sir Keir Starmer to make digital ID the top prime ministerial priority. It urges him to start fundamental transformation in the way British citizens interact with the government. Well, you just say, leave me alone, go away. Maybe you can do that now. You're subject to the crown, aren't you? The king. You're the property. Don't think you're not in the United States. What do you think that municipal law talks to in your civil rights? What do you think happened during Lincoln's day? It says it could cost up to £400 million to build the system and around $210 million a year to roll it out as a free-to-use phone app. The Brit card, quote, should form an important part of Labour's enforcement strategy that does not compromise our principles and values, a foreword in the report reads. Whose principles and whose values are not yours? I can just guarantee that. And they didn't ask you either, did they? How much they really respect you. It added that the previous, remember, what is that? Principles and values. The values, what? That's, there you are, sustainable development back again. That's the third party liability. This third party is this thing that they give rights to, which is this sustainable development goals system. It has an identity. It has a personality. Like a river now has rights. Can't speak. It added the previous government's hostile environment made very little difference to the overall migration figures while having a disproportionately harsh effect on those unfairly targeted. Quote, the Windrush scandal saw thousands of people wrongly targeted by immigration enforcement, including many legitimate British citizens who were unjustly detained or deported, it reads. Self-inflicted wound. What's that government doing to those people that way? And then you blame the people for your incompetence, your ineptness, your disregard, your disrespect. We believe that the progressive government does not have to choose between dealing with these injustices. It must tackle them all head on. Yeah, why don't you tackle that migration, the animal migration. Tackle that. Morgan Wild, Labor Together's chief policy advisor, said, quote, the state makes everyone, whether they are a British citizen or not, prove their right to work or rent. Quote, but we don't give everyone with the right to be here the ability to prove it. That leads to a discrimination. Discrimination now, they rail on now. We're going to do it because of discrimination. Warm and fuzzy. Unjust deportation has happened in the worst Windrush cases, dying in a country that is not your own. What's our problem here in the United States now with kicking people out without due process? Are we talking the same thing that Trump's causing now? As I said, he can deport. Why doesn't he do it by the law? Law doesn't exist, it seems, in these people. I don't understand that. We can explain, maybe someone can explain it to me. No one sent me an email yet. You haven't explained it. Those that may have the answer. And I think maybe there is no answer. That's why I haven't got an email about explaining it to me. Though a national effort to provide everyone with a proof of their right to be here. So you're not presumed with the right there. You're presumed to be a migrant waiting to be caught. You're a criminal waiting to be arrested. Through a national effort to provide everyone with a proof of their right to be here, Brit Card can stop that from ever happening again. Really? Ever? That's an awful long time. The corruption causes you to have the Brit card. How is it never going to happen again? And more work under cover of going after foreigners to build the border walls to the digital panopticon when you think that they're talking about immigrants. ICE taps into nationwide AI-enabled camera network data shows. Data for a license plate scanning tool that is primarily marketed as a surveillance solution for small towns to combat crime, like carjackings or finding missing people, is being used by ICE, according to data reviewed by 404 Media. And I'm going to send you some links to there. I don't have an access to the website. Some of these stories are truncated. We only need to see what I'm going to report. You can look and see more if you have access to these. I'm just going to read down what interested me, and then we'll move on just to show you that this is global. That the globular controls are in place and now being connected up. And they're doing it through this immigration nonsense that it's self-inflicted. The problems are the government caused, and then they blame you. It's no different than leveraged funding. I mean, they're dealing with your own innocence, your own good nature, your own susceptibility to being exploited. Local police around the country are performing lookups on Flock's AI-powered automatic license plate reader system for immigration-related searches and as part of other ICE investigations, giving federal law enforcement side-door access to a tool that currently does not have a formal contract for. Now, I've reported on this Flock system before, the flocking system here. But no, we're not talking about Christmas trees. The massive trove of lockup data, was obtained by researchers who asked to remain anonymous and avoid a potential retaliation and shared it with 404 Media. Listen to that. Just asking about this information. You're coming underneath their gun. You're making America great again, I hear. Okay. I'm looking for the deed here. I'm looking for the actual evidence still. It shows more than 4,000 nation and statewide lookups for local and state police done either at the behest of the federal government or as an informal favor to federal law enforcement or with the potential immigration focus, according to statements from the police department and sheriff's offices collected by 404. It shows that while Flock does not have a contract with ICE, the agency sources data from Flock's cameras by making requests to local law enforcement. The data reviewed was obtained using the public records request from the Danville, Illinois Police Department. It shows that Flock search logs from police departments around the country. As part of a Flock search, police have to provide a reason they are performing the lookup. In the reason field for searches in Danville's cameras, officers from across the U.S. wrote immigration, ICE, ICE plus ERO, which is ICE's enforcement and removal operations, the section that focuses on deportations, quote, illegal immigration, quote, ICE warrant, and other immigration-related reasons. And it's not only ICE token citizen, what other reason might they make up? A Texas cop searched license plate cameras nationwide for a woman who got an abortion. Some of you that don't like abortions, you might be saying, great. Let's expand your horizon on what the reason will be that they're tracking you down nationwide now with the presumption of guilt on you. Earlier this month, authorities in Texas performed the nationwide search of more than 83,000 automatic license plate reader cameras while looking for a woman who they said had a self-administered abortion, including cameras in states where abortion is legal, such as Washington and Illinois, according to multiple data sets obtained by 404 Media. The news shows in stark terms how police in one state are able to take the ALPR technology made by a company called Flock and usually market it to individual communities to stop carjackings and find missing people and turn it into a tool for finding people who have had abortions. In this case, the sheriff told 404 Media the family was worried for the woman's safety, and so authorities used Flock in an attempt to locate her. Understand that. We're looking for out for you. We need help. How many things reports have I done on welfare checks by cops? And the party that they're going to check the welfare of is dead when they leave. Community policing. Remember those broadcasts? In this case, the sheriff told 404 Media the family was worried about the woman's safety, and so authorities used Flock in an attempt to locate her. But health surveillance experts said they still had issues with the nationwide search. Quote, you have this extraterritorial reach into other states, and Flock has decided to create a technology that breaks through the barriers where police in one state can investigate what is a human right in another state because it's a crime in another state. Kate Bartesh of the Digital Defense Fund, who researched both ALRP systems and abortion surveillance, told 404 Media. So what reason will they need when they come for you? You're listening here to BTW RLM 631. And you can't go wrong when you get behind a woodshed. It's just impossible. Now, with the Supreme Court of the United States doing a little border control itself, we can read here, Supreme Court sides with U.S. gun makers in a case centered on the Mexican cartel violence. The High Court's decision was unanimous, finding that Mexico cannot sue 7 gun manufacturers over allegations they aided cartels. The Supreme Court on Thursday ruled in favor of 7 U.S. gun manufacturers who were sued by Mexican government over allegations they aided and abetted illegal gun sales to Mexican cartels. Fast and furious, though, but they sue the gun manufacturers. Isn't that interesting? The High Court's decision in Smith and Wesson Brands versus Estados Unidos Mexicanos, is it Mexicanos, was unanimous, finding that the Protection of Lawful Commerce in Arms Act PLCAA, a statute that protects gun makers from lawsuits, did not include exceptions that gave the Mexican government the ability to sue. Quote, the kinds of allegations Mexico makes cannot satisfy the demands of the statute's predicate exception, close quote, Justice Elena Kagan wrote for the court. Kagan noted the exceptions in law would allow a lawsuit against the gun makers if they, quote, proximately cause, close quote, Mexico harm. The Supreme Court concluded that the proximate cause standards meant the United States manufacturers could not be sued when the complex commerce pipeline goes from them to wholesalers, distributors, rogue retail dealers, straw purchasers, smugglers, and then to the Mexican cartels. Quite a journey, isn't it? I wonder if they need a passport for that. During the proceedings, attorneys for Mexico, which has strict gun sale restrictions, argued that the country should be allowed to file a $10 billion, bravo dollar, civil lawsuit in U.S. courts. The gun makers countered that their standard business practices were being unfairly targeted and that they had no awareness that their products had been illegally transported into Mexico. Second Amendment rights groups, meanwhile, have said a lawful and heavily regulated industry should not be subject to liability for criminal acts committed by armed gangs in another country. The Supreme Court agreed with the gun rights groups in this case. Kagan wrote that Mexico's complaint did not plausibly allege the kind of conscious and culpable participation in another's wrongdoing needed to make out an aiding and abetting charge against the gun companies. So we still see a little bit of pushback at the border. And we see there is some statute, see, not a law, I guess, it's just a statute, functions as law, relative to protections. It's the same protections the government extended to vaccine pharmaceutical manufacturers to kill people without liability, isn't it? They shot you. But they're immune. And then we saw in the Great COVID Swindle something completely different. It wasn't even a vaccine. It was under a contract. It wasn't even a product. It was a demonstration. And yet, there was protections on your own. You could roll up your sleeves, you could protect yourself from it. Not to get the shot. To go to war with these people that became tyrants. To take away your life, try to take you away, take away your life with a bioweapon. And attack you at warp speed with it. Right, Trump? No, you're going to deny that till the day you're dead. and maybe a little bit of authority, a stab back at inclusive postmodernity, we have another SCOTUS ruling clears the way for reverse discrimination cases. And I've been wondering about this for a long, many years. And here we finally get a bit of a clarity again. And I don't know why it takes so many years to get this done, but here we are. Unanimous decision sides with a woman who said she was demoted because she's straight. The unanimous Supreme Court made it easier Thursday to bring lawsuits over so-called reverse discrimination, siding with the Ohio woman who claims she didn't get a job and then was demoted because she's straight. The justice's decision affects lawsuits in 20 states and the District of Columbia, where until now, courts had set a higher bar than members of the majority group, including those who are white and heterosexual, who sue for discrimination under federal law. The court ruled in the appeal for Marlene Ames, who the AP reports has worked for the Ohio Department of Youth Services for more than 20 years. This case actually had to go to the Supreme Court? Is it that difficult to decide no discrimination means no discrimination? In this case, crept up as well as was allowed to take up court space and time for another matter? Why was no discrimination allowed to be discretionary that the lower court judges, so-called, those judges that members of the Bar Association, the private organization ruling the judicial branch, whose House delegate resolutions declaring they promote sustainable development, where they can get away with it, it looks like to me, they say, instead of declaring the law means absolutely no discrimination, caused it to displace 90% of the cases needing to go to the court of last review, but were denied, is yet another problem with this just us system, and it is not the best that this system can do. Well, unless best it can do means is it's guided not by law, but by the best way to incrementally, transparently overthrow the daily functioning of America through giving privileged access to the court of final judicial review before ostensibly unaligned justices, independent of the bar membership, to only 10% of the cases, which is sufficient for, or at least, the appearance of justice to the natives, and opportunities by the Just Us apparatus to correct the most embarrassing decisions made by judges, so-called, in their zeal to destroy the organic establishment too quickly, exposing the occupying usurpation that would otherwise be transparent to most everyone. So now we know, because the elite on high have finally disposed that no discrimination means no discrimination. Who'd have thunk that? Who before now, who'd have thunk the words meant what they said? Because no prior judge did, and the Bar Association plunder can continue with a little less embarrassment now that they've figured that out. And a problem remains, though. Doesn't admitting there was a sex discrimination give power not to equality between the sexes, but to gender confusion, where science shows there is no confusion? And if so, hasn't the Supreme Court then just advanced the inclusive foreign woke agenda and fraud once again? Sure looks like it to me. How about you? See how they do that? Reverse discrimination indeed. And it still brings on the agenda. It's fascinating how this works. But don't expect those MLK files anytime soon. Judge seeks careful review amid pushback from Dr. King's allies. A federal judge in Washington has signaled he may accelerate the release of documents tied to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s assassination in response to President Trump's executive order, which is going to be delayed. All those orders are all delayed, it seems. We're not going to see much of any of it. But during the Wednesday hearing, Judge Richard Leon made it clear that any move would be a slow process, prioritizing privacy and careful review. He said it would still take years. The 1977 court order currently keeps the MLK documents sealed until 2027, President Trump signed an executive order in January urging the unsealing of records tied to the civil rights leader and other assassinated figures. Tick-tock. What's that mean when you're sitting there, a skeleton with a drink in your hand, waiting for this stuff to happen? That's what just crossed my mind. Judge Leon said he would now ask the National Archives to provide him a private inventory of the sealed files to see how materials directly related to King's assassination and the FBI's subsequent investigation are organized. The government itself has recently reviewed the stash. The hearing came about because the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, the civil rights group closely linked with King, sued to keep the records sealed for now. It's why, folks? What is this? The SCLC argues the early release is an attempt to harm the legacy of Dr. King and undermine the civil rights movement. Well, you know, folks, the facts is the facts. If it needs to be undermined, we need to know it. And as we're finding out, there is reverse discrimination rights, isn't there? It's not all one-sided because some group says so. And Dr. King, he's dead. Justice Department Attorney Johnny Walker proposed the department agents to a first pass on the material, filter out sensitive material, and then let the SCLC and the court review what might be safely released. Why is it up to them? This is a national thing, folks. Civil rights. A movement of people, of society, of populations, people needing information to make the right view, to have the right information to make a decision. I'm fairly well thinking that anybody who stands into the public sphere, who makes themselves known and makes themselves an important figure, they're pretty well a public figure, and anything around them needs to be known. I'm not sure what could be so seriously sensitive about the information that's going on, unless we, as we know, it starts to uncover more wrongdoing within the system. And those wrongdoings, as you see now, we have reverse discrimination finally on the board. It should have even never been a case. Should have never, ever happened. But it's because of these hiding the sensitive information underneath the, again, they say it's sensitive information. Because of that euphemism, they are going to keep information from us. Like the JFK files, like the Epstein files, the records. And now they're saying, oh, there is a video. Epstein did kill himself. Oh, they said all the cameras were gone. What all this stuff is going on? Thousands and thousands of documents. Oh, that only gives them an excuse to make it go longer and longer. I said this a long time ago when I was a kid. We will never see the Kennedy files. I hope I'm wrong, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen. It looks like that's going to be exactly what happens. We're not going to see those files. And why? What is still alive today that was alive then that needs to be outed that they don't want outed? It is the problem with this country and why it can't be made a great again. And the guy that said he wanted to make it great again, the nicked ear guy, put those people, if that's the case, that I'm seeing some of the hidden information that's actually not so hidden, is up around his near ears in his recent administration. That's why we're not going to see it. That entity is still around, and now it's killing people. It's committing genocide. That's probably why. Now, you want to take me off of that? Go give, let's bring out the documents and prove otherwise. Prove it. Just prove it. Shut me up. Please. He said the government would avoid disclosing potentially damaging details harvested from the FBI surveillance. Why? What damaging details are they going to be to what? That the FBI's been the worst case of propaganda ever, that they've set up everything, that, again, the Russian hoax, all these things, that they are what they claim they're investigating, they cause what they claim that they're arresting. Judge Leon suggested that if both sides could jointly agree on which documents to release, he could expedite the process. For now, he encouraged the continued dialogue between the involved parties, saying open communication benefit everyone, including the president. That's an interesting view of what a court does. In fact, the court looks at the argument, but the issue between the parties, and it just sits to do the law, and he tells them exactly what, come to an agreement between yourselves, and I'll expedite that. And that's basically what a court's supposed to do. But, for us, look out, a thing that affected our nation, like the assassination of Kennedy, We're never going to find out. The compromise of the Congress Critter Compromise System. We're not going to hear that information. And apparently, the UK isn't going to be making an unlawful arrest over a tweet either. UK Kent Police pays £20,000 compensation to retired constable for unlawful arrest over a tweet. So these files are the ones that are probably going to stay hidden right on your account. No one's going to be arresting you over it. Not going to make a big deal anymore. We're not going to have to worry about a judge saying, let's release the files. They're not going to be a court case now over in the UK. Dragged from his home by a baton-wielding officer, a Kent man wrongly arrested over a social media post warning, has received $27,000 in compensation after the police conceded their handling of the incident was inappropriate and unlawful. That statement right there is why in America the lawyers will say deny, deny, deny. The advice to every official is deny, deny, deny. Julian Falks, a 71-year-old retired special constable from Gillingham, was detained at home last November by six officers carrying batons and pepper spray. The arrest followed his reply on X, Twitter, to a pro-Palestinian activist threatening legal action against them, then Home Secretary Suella Braverman, for describing London's demonstrations as hate marches. Falks was arrested for alleged malicious communications, locked in a police cell for 8 hours and interrogated. Although no criminal act had taken place, he accepted a caution under duress, worried that refusing it might jeopardize international travel plans to visit family in Australia. That caution has now been officially removed from his record. This is another thing I don't talk about too much, is the system knows how to prey upon what you need. I talk about that need and that they prey upon it, but in this case, they know how to put the pressure to get you to capitulate. This is partly what I don't like these plea bargains are about. That's how they do that. And I've faced it, and I've had to do the decision to take a plea deal. Otherwise, I was facing the corruption of a system I know it sits there to prove a point to me. And so that's a very difficult thing. That's why I don't judge people on what they decide to do. But that's not justice. Chief Constable Tim Smith called Falks personally to apologize, referring to the arrest as an ordeal, following up a letter from the force to Falks' solicitors confirmed a settlement agreement and reiterated regret over the incident. The Free Speech Union, which supported Falks throughout the legal process, condemned the incident as a fundamental breach of civil liberties. Dr. Bryn Harris, the group's chief legal counsel, said the FSU is pleased to see that Kent Police has done the right thing and apologized to Julian with due compensation. And all fair and well, but why did they do it in the first place? What's in their mind? What's in the system's brain? What's in that AI little pea brain back there? This is, however, merely the end of the beginning. We now need to see a full and credible investigation into the outrageous violations of Julian's basic freedoms. And this could be where you put your pry bar, maybe help out, go find out what you can maybe do, find out what they do, track this story, and claw back some of those freedoms that you were hearing are being eroded every day by the EU, as a matter of fact. He added that the case underlined the need for law enforcement to respect the principles of democratic policing. Kent Police must ensure that the distress to Julian and cost of the taxpayer result in lessons learnt and realization that policing by consent requires a police service worthy of the consent of free citizens. What a statement right there. I don't think that actually exists, but go with it. So the king can't make no money like that, can he? No, he can't. So don't give up. No phone home is the privacy rebellion digital IDs that they didn't see coming. The digital ID standard behind mobile IDs bakes in remote data access the governments can quietly activate. Privacy activists are pushing back. I hope some of you are privacy activists that start pushing back. Learn your subject matter well and help push back on these things, because again, they just roll on out. There's nothing really to stop them. Welcome to the new Privacy First initiative challenging the digital identity status quo, urging a sharp turn away from the surveillance-ready infrastructure embedded in mobile driver's licenses. Let me focus on this too, the infrastructure word. I talked about it early on. You'll see even Trump invest, there's appropriations for this infrastructure. Now we hear where it could be. It's in your phone, right? So don't think of these systems, these buildings. Infrastructure is whatever mechanisms and things and devices they need to get the outcome they want. This one's also then attached to your mobile driver's licenses. The campaign called No Phone Home brings together a broad alliance of civil liberties groups, privacy experts, technologists, lawmakers, and public officials who are resisting the ways digital IDs compromise people's rights. What's fueling the campaign is concern over how mobile driver's licenses, increasingly adopted in the U.S. and abroad, are built atop a technical framework that allows them to silently transmit data back to issuing authorities. Right? And understanding the third party liability through this as well. So it's globular here. There's no end in sight, it seems. The Fifth Circuit affirms reasonable expectation of privacy in cloud storage and Dropbox case. Now, this is interesting. You start tying this one together with the others, and this isn't really only an appeal. I'm not saying it's diminished, but we've got to kind of watch what happens on this one as well. But you tie the last story with this one, and now we can expand some protection into where we had expectations of privacy, and the court now finally has recognized that. Again, I don't know why these cases take so long to come up about this, but they do. And this ruling redraws the boundary lines for state surveillance in a cloud era with a thick constitutional marker. So here we have a big deal right here for those of us that might consider jumping in. Again, you take the last story with the phone and infrastructure, and there are some constitutional protections. You start importing those and bringing them together and make a more definitive case of protection for you, for ourselves, yourself, and then for others. If you're going to do that, I suppose it will work for you. It'll likely, in general, work for most other people. So you can be that example. You can do the footwork to get people along as well. At least if you appreciate what I do, that's what I do. I just look at what's going on. I give all the information I have to someone, and it's up to you to take that baton and run. Take the trailhead that I can provide you. And again, you do have to trust some level, but everything I give is through the black and white. And so we see these conundrums, these things that shouldn't be questions. Why is there a reverse discrimination case? They even said so-called. It's not really a reverse discrimination. It's a discrimination. But because of a skin color, which is a discrimination, a violation of the law on its face, people that were white couldn't do that. They couldn't be discriminated against. Why that can even happen with people, I don't. How did people even get there? It really blows me away. Now we need the court to tell us, which we don't, but that's how the place now is wired. They get all their importance that way. You have trust and confidence that they're going to do it right, correct? A federal appeals court has ruled that state officials violated the Fourth Amendment when they orchestrated the covert retrieval of documents from a nonprofit's Dropbox folder, an outcome that significantly strengthens legal protections for digital privacy and cloud-based environments, I'll say. Now, this is for a third party and then connivance, though I still don't know about don't be evil, they're evil. I don't know about Google at all relative to this, but that Dropbox was protectable. In a 25-page decision issued May 28, 2025, the U.S. Court of Appeals of the Fifth Circuit held the Heidi Group, a Texas-based pro-life healthcare organization, had a reasonable expectation of privacy in its digital files and that a state investigator's role in acquiring them without judicial authorization amounted to an unconstitutional search. Now, why wouldn't that official think that? It's not much of a different question than why doesn't Trump understand it? There's due process involved in deportation. You could deport people, just give them their one chance to avoid it if they can. And we're not blaming Trump that people were thrown, just let swarm in. That's not on Trump. I get that. But once they're here, that status does shift. The law says so. The Supreme Court's been pretty clear about it all. We get due process. The Constitution does work. It's not the best we can do. It doesn't work in the first instance. That has to be fixed. But it does work. We have the same type of style discussion going on here. Writing for the court, Judge Andrew S. Oldham emphasized that the constitutional right to be free from unreasonable searches extends to, quote, the content of stored electronic communications, including files housed in commercial cloud platforms. Boy, that gives me an idea. Why don't we just start having containerized systems in our phone that we put our data in that it can't be gotten? And maybe we can give ourselves a little bit of protection that way. I don't know yet. But this is what we used to do. You put on your documentation that it's private, and then that helps to say that it needed a warrant. If you don't, it can be viewed as being open to the public where that place is open. Heidi's records are analogous to letters, phone calls, emails, social media messages. Each contains information, content transmitted through a stored with an intermediary that is not intended to be broadcast to the world. The court rejected the official's claim of immunity under Texas law for allegedly violating the state's computer access statute. The ruling found that the actions of Dacus and others did not meet the standard of good faith required for such immunity. You're listening to the standards. Why go through these? I hope you hear them. If you're ever confronted with this, you start looking for these things. If you hadn't heard them before, then start looking for the elements to show that someone, again, they only had authorita, not authority. Quote, this was not a good faith act, the court declared, noting that officials could have requested that Heidi send its documents to the state, or they could have obtained a subpoena ordering Heidi to do so. But instead, they chose to use an ex-employee to surreptitiously retrieve Heidi's documents. The court's reasoning also included a strong rebuke of attempts to stretch the third-party doctrine to cover such activity. And that third-party doctrine is really what I'm concerned about. That's the third-party liability thing kind of built in to a lot of what's going on here. The government cannot access the content of Heidi's documents and files without implicating the Fourth Amendment. Now that's the government, remember. The panel wrote, pointing out that the Dropbox's role as a storage provider did not eliminate Heidi's privacy interest in the content. It's so important to get these words out for people. The decision is expected to have far-reaching implications for digital privacy, especially for entities storing sensitive information in cloud-based services. It affirms the constitutional protections remain firmly in place even when data resides on third-party servers, as long as the data is not voluntarily exposed to the public. And this little thing right there, I read that, I'm thinking, this is going to go a long way to help, I believe, I guess that might have to be tested too, just my opinion. This will go a long way to help prove encryption is required. That gives us the ability to say it's not supposed to be exposed to the public. So if you understand that part, we get this is a covering. I don't want my stuff. It's not public information. Using encryption, intentionally using encryption, is that message. It shouldn't be that hard. It's like there shouldn't have been a case about reverse discrimination. No, it's just discrimination. You're not supposed to do it. No discrimination. It is no. Like this. I want to privatize my conversations. It's partly why I go and use services that have encryption point to point. I want to give a notice that to anybody wanting to look at it, that you needed a warrant. And if it's been encrypted, then how do they know it's even my account? And so this is why this becomes a problem for the government. The Fourth Amendment does not countenance such conduct, the ruling concluded. But again, don't confuse this third-party liability privacy protection for a third-party imposition as a warden in that Siberian gulag that we're facing. So think very carefully about what's going on here. But I would say, I would always insist on the encryption. They want to get rid of it in the EU, probably for one of these reasons right here, although it's not so clearly set. It's not like a Fourth Amendment that they have. It might be in some Universal Declaration of Human Rights type thing, but for us, it's the Fourth Amendment, United States. And we can give a notice that what we have is intended to be private. Encryption, using encrypted lines, is that statement. And it hasn't been up until right here, this case that I've read, hasn't really been discussed that way. They're talking about data in a repository. I'm moving it out a little bit and say, how about the data transmission from point to point? That's why HTTPS is so important on our websites. It's a bit of a danger to go to HTTP, even though, like RLM, we don't have a secured, certified, secured thing. We don't take information much from people. We just take the newsletter. It's not something that, you know, we're worried about. Like, it's not a bank account, I don't think. And those lines that are off the website are HTTPS to start with. And hopefully you've got another encryption on top of that. So, very important case right there on the Fifth Circuit. We kind of want to watch that, make sure it doesn't get thrown out or for what reasons it might get overturned. I'm not sure that it will, but we'll have to see. But until here, also, there's a definitive finding that a company you engaged in acted in good faith, even if you don't use the carrier. Listen to what your carrier might try after hearing of this story. T-Mobile faces backlash for auto-enabled screen recording in T-Life app without user consent. Again, let's just highlight any app that can be able to do this. You really have to look at what they're trying to do. I try not to use many apps at all, and then I try to use one that don't have many permissions, if any. I mean, just try to minimize these things. But here we have T-Mobile faces backlash for auto-enabled screen recording. They'll expand this to other carriers that might start to do this. Open the T-Life app, tap on Manage, then the Settings gear, and navigate to Preferences. If the new feature is present, you'll find a toggle that can be switched from magenta active to gray and inactive, along with an explanatory message. T-Mobile is facing renewed backlash over a T-Life app, this type of quietly introducing a screen recording feature that is automatically activated on some devices. The tool, labeled Screen Recording Tool, has been discovered by users in the app setting, prompting immediate concerns about transparency and user consent. And another thing I've noticed that people will also complain about, you get an update and they don't tell you what they've upgraded and updated. They don't even give you the idea. And again, it's found, like, let's say, in the settings, if you know to go there. And what I've been noticing too, people will say they changed their settings and that the next update changes them back, or even before the next update, they get changed back. So this is a much, much bigger problem, and this, every time I read these stories and it says you'll need your phone, like the UK digital ID, just to have to prove you exist, you have to have this digital ID, you have to have a phone, is the vulnerable problem. All of it. It's described as a means of gathering behavioral data to help enhance the app's functionality. The tool is being deployed without upfront notification in many cases. Now, why behavioral data? In a void, I guess I wouldn't be too upset. Maybe how I punch the keys, right? I don't know. Why would he look at that? But when you look at the globularity that's upon us, you look at all the sustainable development goals, you look at the Sesame Credit, you look at all the things that are going on, and it's all about gaining your behavior, introducing things that control that behavior. Then this has a much more ominous problem built into it. You'd think that they would just straightforward make an app, you press the buttons, you do. What's the behavior? that they're tracking them. Though T-Mobile insists it does not collect personal data and only monitors activity within the app itself, the feature's default on status has unsettled many customers. The company told CNET this tool records activities within the app only and does not see or access any personal information. It's a screen recorder, folks. But noted that the users can deactivate it under preferences section. While this type of telemetry is not uncommon in the tech world, listen carefully, folks, it's not uncommon for this in the tech world, the method of deployment here has caught attention. My problem is that they exist at all. Now, you can't get rid of them, like what we're finding AI coming on to do the very same thing on your computers. They're built into the chip system on chips now are part of your system. Unlike the app's pre-existing screen share function, which allows support reps to view a user's screen during troubleshooting, but only with explicit approval, this newly introduced screen recorder operates passively in the background. Let me reiterate, what do you think AI is relative to this? Those using newer devices, including iPhones, have reported spotting the toggle under T-Life settings. When opened, the settings reveal a message. Quote, we use a tool to record how customers use the app to analyze and improve your experience. Only T-Mobile will review and analyze your info. Then you go read the fine print. They can change that anytime they want. And so I guess the other answer, just shut it off. Just, if you can, get rid of it. But anyway, some of you think, oh, I'm not doing anything wrong. Well, it might be helpful. The wording clearly distances the feature from the more familiar customer support too, yet fails to explain why consent isn't requested beforehand. Reports from tech publications such as Droid Life have shown that this change hasn't gone unnoticed, especially among users who discovered the feature had been turned on without their knowledge. As awareness spreads, the rollout has ignited questions about how much control customers really have over what's being recorded. And for those looking to disable the feature, the path isn't overly complicated. Open T-Life's app, tap on Manage, and then the settings gear and navigate to Preferences. But why would you have to all do all that? See, why is that even a question? And we're just looking at a little bitty look, you know, a small view of what these machines will start to do and what they can collect. Again, we focus on the screen capture, but we may forget about all the other things that are built in on the layer we can't get at, why most phones are not what they call rooted, because you're on a service layer above the root power of that device. They've got control of your machine, folks. They told us that way back when, didn't they? Sit back and relax. If the new feature is present, you'll find a toggle that they can switch from magenta and active and gray inactive, and along with that explanation, the explanatory message. The rollout appears to be gradual, and it's unclear whether the update is limited to specific models or regions. Still, the underlying concern is a familiar one. Even if the intent is diagnostic or performance related, implementing such tools without prior opt-in continues to erode trust. T-Mobile has framed the update as a way to quickly troubleshoot reported or detected issues. Detected issues? Really? But the lack of a transparent opt-in mechanism calls into question how seriously user autonomy is being taken. Rather than allowing individuals to knowingly consent before any screen activity is recorded, the company has once again leaned on passive data collection under the banner of user experience. And so just constant theme behind which head, we have to be very cautious about these electronic devices. We're not in control. They will. It's all for profit. You are the product. It's not a joke. And we have this, the court case that I recited before, you have privacy rights, is eliminated. Remember, I said be careful of the third-party imposition. You may have a contract with the with the T-Mobile, but you may not have T-Life as the coder who has that. What about that relationship? And so we have lots of these. When you get into copyright law, there's a lot of problems built into all these. Who has given permission? How do I keep it from being used outside or being used at all against what a condition that I might be doing? I don't want the scrutiny. I really don't like remote access myself. I turn it off on everything I own. I don't know if it's completely off because it's there. And look into the future. AI will turn it on for you. Oh, we're going to be so helpful. We're here from the government. We're here to help folks. Or worse yet, not a government. We're here from an NGO. You don't have any constitutional rights. But we can look. We can look and look and look. Get with the flock. And the Mandela effect isn't just affecting the internet, it seems. Very interesting little story. Exposed. Canadian NGOs pushed Ukraine to seize Russian territory. For decades, Canadian organizations have been whispering in Ukraine's ear, pushing dangerous ideas about seizing Russian land. Here's what they did. The Canadian-Ukrainian Center in Donetsk in 1994 housed 10,000 books with alternate accounts of history. Okay, consider your digital gulag existence as well right here, folks. This is a physical thing in the world. The Canadian-Ukrainian Center of Donetsk in 1994 housed 10,000 books with alternate accounts of history. The center was backed by a Toronto-based Canadian Friends of Ukraine NGO. Remember what I've talked about relative to the earlier part of the broadcast, working NGOs into the system to be subversive as well. Another story. Journey to Ukraine by Markian Teletsky, London 1971, asserted that 43,900 kilometers square of the Kursk, Voronezh regions and 23,900 kilometers squares of the Donetsk region had been annexed. Even parts of Belarus were described as historically Ukrainian. Geography of Ukraine and Ukrainian Settlements, Toronto, New York, 1957, by Ivan Tesley, invented 177,600 kilometers square of, quote, Ukrainian ethnographic land, close quote, in the former USSR. It also claimed 27,000 kilometers square of Belarus is culturally Ukrainian. Karl Koberski, Ukraine in the World Economy, Prague, 1933, singles out a colony of Ukraine in the former Soviet Union's Far East. The Kursk and Voronezh regions, plus North Caucasus and Kuban, are called Ukrainian national territories. The same book dubs Soviet territories along the Don and Terek rivers as Ukrainian lands within Russia. The Kuban and Stavropol and Astrakhan regions are called Ukrainian lands separated by a strip of non-Ukrainian territory. Nationalism tainted. The Canadian-Ukrainian Center also promoted Dmytro Donatsov, fascist ideologue, and Pelagiy Bandera, the Nazi collaborators, in their library. The materials from the Canadian-Ukrainian Center are now banned as extremists. I suppose we can now claim to be the Mandela effect, folks. We should just print books. The insidious part of this is the books can be evidence in a court of law. And this may be the sort of thing why Russia is so intent on correcting people as to the history of the territory there, and then produces the documentary evidence to prove it. They're really keen on that. Not limited to 10,000 book library in Donetsk, but that's also likely why the Israelis flood the global information domain with fabricated history to obscure the existence of Palestine to cover its illegal belligerent occupation of Palestine and its genocide of the Palestinians. It appears to be the very same technique. When I mentioned Ukraine, remember, that's only been a government since 1990, I think. So the book printed in 1933 didn't even have the name to be used. And such is the AI, how we're supposed to qualify everything. But lying to people about the past is likely why it's called his story. Can you imagine the AI, what the AI will do with such repositories of human knowledge they keep telling us that AI has access to? When that library gets digitized and picked up by AI, that's the future knowledge that's going to be imparted when AI is trusted and there's confidence in it. What do you think, Mr. WorldCoin, all-seeing eyeball? Is that how that's being worked on for us? So, very interesting what's turned up here and there. Canada, we heard the thing about the Nazis. It was supposed to have stopped the Nazis, right? What's the Nazis doing in the world if they were stopped? It is Russia's question. And this is, becomes the very focused point. They started the SMO now, apparently, soon to possibly be, I guess I should say, earlier in the broadcast, the CTO, against a terrorist organization that operates out of Ukraine. Now they're going to lock their people down under martial law, if you will. Put all those elements together, that's what you have. And so you see what they pointed outwards, they turned the guns inwards now. You see that the Europe is now just voted in, the UN just voted in someone who grandfather was a Nazi, and she is a sympathizer of that. Russia's whole issue is to denazify Ukraine, wherever these books say it's at. It is not pointing out to a future of peace. It's not pointing out to a Europe that intends peace. It's not turning out to be that the West, including here Canada as well, intends that peace either. And so we have this subversion going on, again, globally. And that chaos brings, allows the system that is being put in place to be working all the time, is what I've been talking about this broadcast. How that's working. How they point out one thing, and then they let the rest go through. The Russians have been pretty straightforward. Listen, we've got to stop this Nazi. We thought we stopped them back in World War II, and we stopped fighting when that happened. So we have no intention to go farther west, like you are going well more than 1 inch east. And yet now we see government the EU, I guess, as the overarching government, and then NATO as the so-called, how do you be defense and go attack the world, right? Is this the whole problem there? They're completely insane about how they're doing it. It's just psychopaths that run the thing. How do you then profess or deny in your profession the existence of the Nazis and then fight Russia, who's trying to stop them yet again? And yet in Canada, across the pond, if you will, from there, and then a hop skip over to the mainland into the Eastern Europe, you have Canada supporting it and actually being part and parcel of a library that prints lies as a library. Cannot have a bunch of people in Canada feeling too good about that. Cannot have people in America look at that and watch libraries of fraud and not turn around to their libraries and consider maybe theirs too. Maybe not just about Ukraine. And this is a little bit apart, as I was coming up through watching education and books. I don't even know how I started to do it. I just started reading, this is after I got out of school, started reading books the school books, and started to track how they changed the information. And you could see, initially, you start to see how the information gets pulled out. It just disappears. What might have been in a previous version just doesn't exist. And then you started to take a little more time and study what was being said. And then later on, even further, with the studies I had, I had to recall back reading those passages and realizing inside those books, the transformation of language was going on, the transformation of expectations, the transformations of meanings of words were being done, and slowly changing our minds into the future that they want, so that we're more receptive when we grow up and get into it. We don't even actually notice it. We think it's normal. That this is the what AI is tapping into for the future that they want, and our little ones coming up are not going to see any different. It will be pervasive to them. It is going to go through here. We see this issue with the Canadian-Ukraine NGO with the library. The AI will be the authorita and the library. We're having this interesting discussion on the Mandela effect. Well, here's a physical one. You just create a bunch of lies and put them out as legitimate. How are disparate people supposed to know? You do your comparisons, but there's so much noise in the world. Who pays attention to you? Who paid attention to the 17% about, or maybe quite less, it may have been down to 10 or 17 if truth be known, of those that were speaking out to try and protect others in the great Comey swindle? In the moment I'm talking about, not now, 5 years later, oh, now everybody knows. Now even the ones that took it out, got it, aren't having to admit to the failure. What, Scott Adams or somebody, does he do it? He's a cartoonist or something. He comes out, oh, you win. This was not, I had to send him back an ex-Twitter. This was not a win. It was something that you didn't have to, there was no science behind it. It was completely law that protected you. And this is not a win that you find out you have a turbo cancer or whatever he's got. And so this is how the society is moving along. We have now evidence, 10,000 book library of lies. Little pieces of information here and there. Databases that are corrupted, hacked, altered, little remarks, reasons being put down all this time. And until AI picks it up, it's going to be a people that look at it that have no thought in their brain. They're looking for a crook. They're looking for a culprit. They're looking for a subject. That's all their job is. They're the hammer. You're the nail. They're the handcuff. You're the arrestee. So I'm not really sure where people are going to finally put down about the errors that are being done and allowed. If it's a gripe, the criticism I have of the justice system waiting 50 years to change these things and say, no, it was supposed to be back then that this was supposed to be changed and said the way the law said it. That society goes 50 years by looking at all the same words and can't know, in this case, for this episode, that no discrimination means exactly that. That we went to the Supreme Court to get that said should be an embarrassment for everyone. It shows you how far society will allow themselves to be pushed and still not get it until then. Even heard the hesitation, the Fifth Circuit decision about we have in our digital repositories, we have an expectation of privacy. That's going to possibly be a big deal, you heard. Why do we have this hesitation? Why was it a question in the beginning? And why is there going to be hesitation after it's declared? I even told you, well, it's an appeals. It could go to the Supreme Court and change, can't it? Why is there such a question on things that at least I thought would be very straightforward? It's no different than the common core math, where 2 and 2 could be 5. No discrimination could be just about anything. Up until 40 years later, it's not. It's something. It's actually, you can't have a reverse discrimination. And white folk have the right to sue for being discriminated against anybody else as well, if that was the basis. And those bases are only like 7 things. It's not even everything, right? So remember that too. I failed to touch that. We're looking at reverse discrimination. It's not everything you feel discriminated against. It's only the things that are in the black and white. If it's not in there, your case will be dismissed. Pretty simple. Your matter will not be heard. You will feel slighted because you've been wrong, at least to your mind. But that's not what the government covers. That's not the liability that you're going to be getting remedy on against somebody for breaching it. And so, this little story here kind of got me a little bit. A library with 10,000 books, and the books had false information in them. And published, supposedly published, at times that there was this government, this state didn't even exist. And people accepted it as truth. In a way, should be pretty scary. I don't mean that in a way that's scary. I mean to explain that people, can be duped very easily, Vince. And so here we have it. Pretty interesting. Mandela effect in real life, dependent, I guess, on what section of that library you went to, and whether or not you're on the same side of the world to be able to double-check it when someone told you, no, the book didn't say that, it said this. And you're looking at your book, and it says something, and they look at their book, and it says something else over time. Neat, huh? Just like they can do on the Internet. We all think the digitization, we see a web page that's going to be settled forever. No, those things get disappeared all the time. They get changed, they get altered. That was one of the problems with the RLM. Real Liberty Media trying to transfer everything over. They locked out all the files, so we had to figure out ways to get at it. Thank you to the folks that did that. That's why it's taken quite a long time to get things worked out. And if you can, please find the donation buttons. Sound is working really, really, really hard. I can't tell you how hard he's working. Trying to keep this thing afloat and working hard and trying to make it better. And Uncle Bonehead, thank you very much for coming on board. And all your ideas, it's all, folks, as people moving together, we're all in a same, it's a very similar mindset about all this and how we're going to keep ourselves protected and keep the word going out. So if you can, donate what you can. And if you want to have some information and talk, call Sound. Get on in touch with Sound and get yourself a slot on the schedule. This has been BTWRLM 631. And I'll be with you next week. Tech tips are nature willing.
Echoes call the owl. Sunday, the clock strikes three, Hal's voice rolls like thunder, piercing free, pull up a chair, lean in close, lessons to learn, dose by dose, behind the woodshed, no stone unturned, Hal's words ignite, the airwaves burn, stand up, listen, it's time to learn, behind the woodshed. Hide a can of wood bass, ready to burst for unspoken truths and unquenchable thirst. Behind the woodshed, no stone unturned, house words ignite, the airways burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Behind the woodshed, where truths are earned. So mark the time when Sunday comes, behind the woodshed, beating drums. Beacon, fierce and bold, in the fight for truth. Next week, heed the call, behind the woodshed standing tall.